got a troubled mind. Wash it out and hang it up on a clothing line, and the sun will shine.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Science Facts and Fallacies podcast brought to you by the Genetic Literacy Project. I'm your host, Cameron English.
And I'm your co-host, Kevin Folta, a professor who cares about science communication.
This is the weekly show where we discuss the biggest stories from the Genetic Literacy Project to keep you informed about groundbreaking developments from the worlds of science and medicine, and of course, to help you separate facts from fallacies as you read the headlines. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Cameron and Kevin here, as always. What's up, Kevin?
Oh, nothing. Just enjoying a 90-degree fall day in Florida. Can't beat it.
The smoke has finally cleared here, and it's about 72 outside, and I'm dancing. It's about to rain. So finally, I've escaped this burning summer. So hooray.
Well, that's really good. I'm glad to hear that things are under control there. And, you know, it's with all the other weirdness happening in the world, it's good if natural disasters could stay away for a little bit. So, you know, at least let us focus on the unnatural disasters.
Yeah, you just can't win. I mean, the fires are still burning, but the rain's coming. So it's going to hopefully put a dent in it, or just put it out for the year, God willing. So let's jump into our stories and offer maybe a little bit of a distraction. So first up, so-called smart drugs or nootropics promise to boost your brain health in all sorts of ways. But according to a new study, they contain potentially dangerous combinations of unapproved pharmaceutical drugs. Alternative health guru Mike Adams has built a disinformation empire, according to a new report. He's been banned from every social media platform. But he's still getting his content out there. We're going to look at how he's doing that. And then finally, have we been misled about the benefits of consuming whole grains? One science writer says yes, and we're going to look at the evidence and see how his claims stack up. First up, though, Kevin, let's talk about nootropics. I'm not very familiar with this as a class of medicines or supplements or what have you.
Yeah, I think it's nootropics. Nootropics, okay. Yeah. This is part of the billion-dollar supplement industry. And these are the things they sometimes call smart drugs, very popular, both because people trying to achieve higher performance in, you know, school or in their jobs, but also the problems with memory loss and dementia and other cognitive declines really being increasing because we're surviving heart attacks and pneumonia. And so these are the issues that that make something like nootropics a little more attractive, I guess, to the average person. The problem is that these are over-the-counter supplements, or maybe not even over-the-counter, over the internet. So the problem is that these are not approved by U.S. Food and Drug Administration. There's no clinical testing. And this was a big part of the article I neglected to say by Ed Cara that was in Gizmodo. Where he followed a new publication that came out that talked about the dangers and possible side effects of consuming these supplements.
So, Kevin, we talked about this before, everybody listening, but I want to throw some of the most common arguments that people present in defense of taking really any supplement, but these as well. Because they're ready for your criticisms. You know, they have blogs, they have, I mean, maybe in some cases, journal articles that will back up what they're saying. So they're ready for these criticisms. So let's just go through these and see if we ourselves can present a good argument. So, you know, I've heard the claim, it's my body, it's my choice. If I want to go down to the drugstore and buy a big old tub of vodka and drink myself to death, I can do that. Here in California, at least, I can smoke as much weed as I want until I die from eating too many Cheetos. So why is this any different, Kevin?
Because these are compounds that we know are psychotropic. And so, yes, alcohol, THC or pot or whatever, you know, whatever you want to call it. All of these are drugs that you can obtain. The problem is that these types of supplements are not regulated in any way. Alcohol certainly is. You have to have disclaimers on the package, know what the content is, all that stuff. But here you're talking about chemicals. And a good example, the there's a very popular group of what they call brain boosters. And you know what? Don't boost things. Don't boost your immune system. Don't boost your brain. It's already good. You know what? But these are drugs called racetams. And there's one that's called piracetam, which is a drug that has been approved in other countries for things like seizures and epilepsy, myoclonus, other things that this drug has been approved for. You can get it in Japan with a prescription. It's been around since the 1950s. It has some marginal evidence of efficacy and very good safety. The problem is that they start to sell these similar analogs, so compounds that are similar. So things like ambaracetam, aniracetam, phenylpiracetam. It sounds like tools on the Three Stooges. Oxiracetam. They sell these things that are biologically active, we think, maybe, analogs, and they all have effects potentially that are neurological. Things like piracetam, the original compound, these have been around for a long time, and they have similar structure to other anticonvulsants and other derivatives of neurotransmitters, so things like GABA. And so it's plausible that there would be some sort of effect on memory because it affects how acetylcholine works. We already know that. There's people who are prescribed this for myoclonus, or so like when you're getting that jerk as you fall asleep, like those weird or hiccups, you know, these weird involuntary muscle movements that people get. And so this is what it's prescribed for in other countries. These things are all supplements. And the problem is nobody knows exactly what's in there or how much is in there. And so in some cases, when you actually test the drug, the thing that's supposed to be in there isn't. A bunch of things that are similar might be, and they may be there four times higher levels than they're supposed to be. So you don't know what you're getting when you're moving into these kinds of supplements.
Okay, well, fair enough. But, you know, even approved drugs, FDA approved, I mean, they can have very serious side effects. If you look at antidepressants, for example, you know, they do have a very powerful biological effect. But sometimes they can even worsen depression in people. They can cause erectile dysfunction. They can cause weight gain. So how is this new class of drugs or whatever nootropic would be, why are these much different than, say, something the FDA approves? It's very powerful and can still be really, really harmful.
Well, because you're not using it under the supervision of a physician who knows the questions to ask and know what to look for in you as you're taking a drug and as you're progressing along with it. You also have standardized amounts that are present in prescribed drugs, whereas these things, who knows what's in there? And that's what's so funny about this. You know, one of the things about COVID that's been kind of fun is that I get to eat lunch and watch TV. I get to watch the news, middle of the day. And the first commercial will be like, take this drug, this pill to fix your brain fog and help your memory. And it comes from jellyfish. and people are like, yeah, cool. And then the next commercial is, have you been harmed by Prilosec? And, you know, so it's two commercials, some that are promising you magical medicinal effects from things that have been unproven and untested, and then commercials that sue you for things that go slightly off of their intended effect. And it's really kind of contrasting and very interesting to observe.
Okay, well, those are very thoughtful answers. So the only conclusion I can reach is that you are a shill for Big Pharma.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, big, yeah. And everybody else, if you read the internet. But basically, the guidance of the article is that supplements are too good to be true. And at worst, they're doing harm. And at best, they give you expensive pee. They just don't have the clinical proof of efficacy that you really need to be able to take a drug for a condition with confidence.
All right. Well, we'll leave that one there. And let's move on to our next story. So this one's called Conspiracy Promoter Mike the Health Ranger Adams Built Online Disinformation Empire That Subverts Science, Report Finds. And this is an article I co-authored with the executive director at GLP named John Entine. And let me introduce this since I
wrote
article at least. So the way this works, or the way the story starts, is Mike Adams is like an uber guru in the alternative health movement. You know, he promotes organic food. He hates GMOs. He's skeptical of vaccines. He thinks the government has weather weapons. he's an interesting character, and he finally got banned off of every major social media platform beginning in 2019 and finally permanently in 2020 for some inflammatory comments he was making that we're going to get into in a minute. But being the enterprising entrepreneur that he is, he didn't just go away. And what this report presents is this little scheme he came up with. So either Adams, after he got banned, or someone that works for him or someone who's a fan of his, set up a private support group on Facebook. It was called Natural News Supporters. And there was a handful of pages that acted as administrators on this page. And there was about 390 people or so in the group. And all they did was coordinate with each other to share his information on still more public Facebook pages. That all goes back to his Natural News website. Now, the trick was they were using domain names that Adams had bought over the course of 20 years, and they had nothing to do with his Natural News website, but they were still linking to that material. And so despite being banned, Facebook essentially just can't keep up with him. It's like a game of whack-a-mole is one of the analogies the report uses. And so some of the pages have been shut down, but the crazy part is he's still getting around this ban to promote all of this goofy stuff that he believes in.
It's really interesting because he has not just gone after the, darlings of the political left who don't like GMOs and maybe are really weird about fluoride. And I don't know if that's political left, but it seems that there's a lot of people in that side of things, you know, organic food, all that stuff. That's where he used to always be, it seems. But he's been in 9/11 conspiracy land. He's been going after climate change. A lot of articles about chemtrails. This guy's all over the map with the common denominator of misinformation or disinformation, outright false information that he knows is false, including saying I'm an idiot. I think I was one of his biggest failures of 2016 or something. I don't remember. But it's amazing that he has such a network of facade websites that still keep Natural News going, even though he's been busted for spreading false information, but also a lot of hate information. Like, what was the stuff about him with Nazis?
Yeah, that's a great thing to bring up. So I will first point out that he is no fan of GLP. He doesn't know who I am, which is probably good, but he called John a, quote, Giorno terrorist, because in 2014, I wasn't there yet, but GLP authored a profile of him, and we laid out all this information. And he responded with this invective article, and he, John Entine is this, and he's that, and he worships the devil, et cetera. You know, just anything you could throw against the wall, he brought up. But to Kevin's point, Adams, he wrote an article in 2014, and he actually compared researchers in the biotech field to Nazis. And so I'm going to read this quote directly. This article has been archived, so you guys can check what I'm saying. But he says, quote, "It is the moral right and even the obligation of human beings everywhere to actively plan and carry out the killing of those engaged in heinous crimes against humanity." And then the quote goes on a little bit later. He says, "Today, Monsanto collaborators, publishers, journalists, and scientists have signed on to the Nazi genocide machine of our day, the biotechnology industry, and its evil desire to dominate the world's food supply and blanket the planet with deadly chemicals that have been scientifically shown to cause horrific cancer tumors." Now, literally nothing in that sentence is scientifically correct, but I do want to point out just how violent this is. And the context, the broader context is he's comparing people, I guess, who are going to go kill scientists to the people who tried to kill Hitler during World War II. So he says, you know, those people were commendable and they were brave and you need to use them as an inspiration. And he pulled the article down, realizing how unwise it was to encourage people to commit violence. But he nonetheless said it, and it has been archived.
Yeah, but it was a little bit different. At the time that that thing came out, it was a website called Monsanto Collaborators, and he didn't cop to it. And someone was doing some forensic computing or computational analysis where they looked at all the metadata and the programs and the tools used to create the web page. And they were exactly the same as those that were used to create Natural News. So this Monsanto Collaborators page came up and called for the death of scientists and journalists. And Vandana Shiva published it on hers. She linked to it to her website, which I got a screen cap of, thank goodness, because she took it down too. But yeah, I got it. And but she was talking about this, and Adams got busted. I mean, he got caught with this article there, and it was really a turning point in the Natural News, I think, in its credibility, because here he was caught red-handed, openly calling for the execution of people who communicate science.
Yeah, it's really stunning. And I have to say, just I want to get this on the record, is that I'm very much in favor of free speech. And it concerns me that society seems to be getting more comfortable with just shutting people down, whether it's, you know, whether it's Facebook or whether it's actually the government or whether it is, you know, a domain registrar or whatever, or a web hosting company. It really starts to scare me. And I think there's some serious trade-offs that we haven't really thought through when this starts happening more and more frequently. But then someone like Mike Adams comes along and, you know, calls people I work with terrorists, and then he threatens violence. And I kind of feel like, I'm like, Mike, give me a break, dude. You know, I'm trying to be the iconoclast and defend your right to speak, and then you're threatening to kill people. It's just like, it's just nonsense, you know? So I guess what I'm saying is the boundary is, if you're going to threaten violence against people, then you really do deserve to be non-personed off the internet, I think.
Yeah, it's we're not smart enough to be able to have the freedom of free speech. I mean, and I hate to say something like that. It's the idea that you can't just go anywhere and write false information, because words mean something. And when you're the president of the United States and you say liberate Michigan, and then you've got groups forming, militia groups, to go kidnap the governor, words mean something. And so we don't have a population that can handle the words. And that's really the problem. The internet should be an open wild west, but we should also be good enough at synthesizing what it is and what it isn't. And I'm afraid we're just not there yet.
Yeah, it's tough stuff. And I just frankly think there isn't a great answer. And I remember I asked a biologist who we both know, Kevin, named Mary Mangan, about this, I think over a year ago now. And I brought up the same concern that, you know, I mean, I know these people are spreading nonsense, but the idea that a big corporation or the government can just shut down speech it doesn't like, it's a little chilling. And she said, I know, I share that concern, but at the same time, if you tell your kids not to get vaccinated, they might die. And so, you know, that it's a fine balancing act. I don't think anyone has a perfect answer, and I don't know how to solve it, but I guess we can just leave it there for now. And maybe you guys can think about it after you listen to this episode, but let's move on, Kevin, and unless you have something to add and talk about whole grains.
No, whole grains it is. Let's go for it.
Okay. So this one's called Here's What Whole Grain Really Means, and it's not the health claim you've been told. And this is by Hank Campbell at Science 2.0. So what's going on here?
Well, this is a interesting article by Hank. You know, when you hear the word whole grain or whole wheat, it brings to mind certain health advantages. And compared to 2% grain or skim grain, whole grain is good stuff. But you see what I'm saying. It's just kind of these kind of amorphous terms. And there was a recent study that did some looking at how people perceived issues and words on packaging. So things like whole grains or whole grain crackers, whole grain bread, or whatever. And are they actually healthier? And it turns out that when you look at that the word whole grain would kind of supersede all the other information around salt, sugar, other aspects of the nutrition of that product. And it would kind of override that. So people had a very hard time analyzing what was really healthy and what wasn't, because whole grain stood in the way and steered their decision.
One of the more interesting points he makes is that these marketing claims that you find on packages, they're often based on epidemiological studies that basically associate eating whole grains with improved health. And he says, we know these kinds of studies are low quality. They've generated all kinds of goofy results, like, glyphosate causes cancer, and red wine is going to kill you, and butter is going to kill you, all this stuff. So there's really no reason to accept the scientific basis for these claims. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that's true. I mean, the scientific basis of the claims is even a little bit flimsy. And when you start to look at some of the benefits, yeah, when you eat whole grain food, you have certain vitamins and other things that are better. Some B vitamins, fiber, dietary fiber. A lot of this stuff does increase with whole grain because whole grain is the whole grain. it's the endosperm, it's got multiple parts that are there of the grain. It's not just taking the kernel of the grain, and which is what happens during processing. But basically the other thing that he really talks about is that all of bread is processed food, and you have to be really careful when you look at it very carefully, because there's it doesn't really mean anything to simply say whole grain or seven grain or whatever. You have to look very carefully at all of the characteristics in that food item.
Yes. And one other thing it's probably prudent to point out about these kind of studies is that they're based on food frequency questionnaires. And basically this requires you to recall what you've eaten over an extended period of time. And it's really difficult. So if I was to say, two Tuesdays ago, how many servings of white bread did you have? And how many servings of banana did you have? You can imagine that this gets very complicated very quickly. I think I've mentioned before, there's been studies that have looked at these questionnaires. And basically what they found is that people are underreporting the amount of food they consume to the point that they would die. So basically, the data that's going into these epidemiological reports doesn't stand up. And so as the old adage goes, garbage in, garbage out. And so that's one of the big problems. But what do you think about that? Just basically that part right there.
Well, self-reporting is filled with dangers because people have two things that happen. One, they have bad memories because they don't take enough of those medicines we talked about earlier. People have bad memories. They don't remember stuff. And second is that when they do report, they do tend to misestimate what they really consume towards a more healthy ideal. So people will not say that they have six beers a day. Well, I might have one now and then, right? I don't eat a loaf of bread every day. I might have a slice for breakfast. They underreport the negative things that they do in these kinds of surveys, which biases the data. And it is definitely a real problem when you ask people to self-report their consumption.
So let me throw in two other things, because Hank got some guff for this article, both on social media and on the comment section of our article. And so by extension, people said, why were you publishing this? So I just want to back this up with a little bit of science so people don't think we're just making things up here. But people were complaining that he was ignoring all kinds of studies on this question and he was being too cynical. And so I did a little homework, and this is a quote from a 2010 clinical trial in the British Nutrition Journal. And so they open with, and they point out that recommendations for whole grain intake are based on observational studies showing that higher consumption is associated with reduced cardiovascular risk. So I don't think he was wrong there. He's right that this is based mostly on epidemiological data. And then they went on to do a clinical study where they took three groups of people. One was a control group. They ate no whole grains. And the other two ate increasing amounts of whole grains over increasing amounts of time, up to, I believe, it was 18 weeks. And then this is their conclusion. So they said, although reported whole grain intake was significantly increased among intervention groups and demonstrated good participant compliance, there was no significant difference in any markers of CVD risk between groups. So not only is that not epidemiological, it's I guess you would call it the gold standard. It's a clinical study. And then one final thing, Kevin, then jump in here if you want. But in 2019, someone else did a meta-analysis of 19 clinical studies, and they basically found the same thing. They said consuming whole grain does not improve or decrease your risk for obesity. There are some health benefits to health grains. However, if we're going to start claiming that it's going to, you know, make you healthier and make you slimmer, we need better data on this. And I can link to these when we post this episode. But all that to say, I think his argument was perfectly justified, and not everyone's going to agree, and we could start doing the thing where we throw studies at each other. But I'll just leave it there. And Kevin, if you want to add anything.
Well, it's the old adage that, you know, it's you're not eating all bread all the time. And so you don't have to necessarily be super careful in the way that you think about it. Now, I grew up in a Wonder Bread house, which, you know, which is a great name for that bread because you'll wonder what it's made out of, right? And that was always the question. My grandmother, though, was into the whole multigrain bread where she had stuff that I swear you could sand barnacles off a battleship with this bread, and she would never have anything other than this kind of like total the stuff was thick slices of really crunchy, chewy, you know, whatever. This is like her kind of thing. So I kind of grew up with a bias against that. And I certainly like a nice whole grain bread when someone makes it, but I never had a problem with white bread or like, you know, Italian bread, especially. I could eat a French bread loaf in one sitting, you know. What this really all boils down to is that the story that we come through all the time is that there's a lot of information that is on packaging that biases our perception and influences our buying decisions that may not necessarily be the best for us. And really that's all it is that, you know, everything in moderation and be careful as you read packages.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I think the moderation thing is cliche. Yeah. Cliche as that is to say, it really is true. And I really figured this out when I went on a serious low carb diet years ago and I lost a ton of weight. But as the weight came off, I started to realize it wasn't the magic of avoiding carbs necessarily. It was just learning how to balance things in a way that made sense for me personally. And so like you were saying, at a certain point, if I wanted to have a beer with my friends or I wanted to have a slice of French bread, which I love because it's delicious, I could, you know what I mean? It was just saying, okay, I'm just going to have this and then I'm going to get back to my routine. And so it's really a mindset, I think, than anything else, to sound like a life coach for a second.
No, and it's, you know what my grandfather always said, everything in moderation except tequila.
I hate tequila. It's one of the few alcohols that doesn't agree with me, unless there's a really good one. But the mid-level stuff that you can get at the grocery store, no bueno.
Well, you just have to experiment with all the different ones that are out there, and eventually you find some rather budget-friendly tequilas that are actually pretty good. And maybe we should start a podcast on budget drinking with Kevin Folta, right? No, it is true. Everything, if you just kind of read your labels carefully and understand that a lot of what you're reading is trying to mislead you, or doesn't necessarily, if it's not willingly trying to mislead you, it's not giving you information that will translate directly to healthy decisions. And then you have to know what you're looking for and look at everything very carefully. That's really the take-home message.
Yep. Yep. And as we wrap up, he makes one final point that I think we should at least just touch on. But he says that bad nutrition epidemiology sows distrust of disease epidemiology. And this, as we are now seeing in the world today, is a very serious problem because you have experts trying to make recommendations about how to respond to COVID, and they're trying to model the disease and project where it's going to go. And you have millions upon millions of people who are saying, I just don't believe anything you say. And according to Hank, this is part of the problem that we have sort of seeded ourselves. What do you think of that?
No, very true. I mean, no argument there. Definitely true.
Well, Kevin and I both agree. So there. Well, let's leave it there for the week. Kevin, what's going on at Talking Biotech?
Really cool stuff. So a few weeks ago on this podcast, we talked about cancer vaccines, especially as they would apply to digestive cancers. And I was able to interview Adam Schnuck, Dr. Adam Schnuck, who is the physician who is, well, the researcher who is working with cancer vaccines with very promising results. So we do a deep dive into what he's doing to solve problems like colorectal cancer or esophageal cancer, which are insidious diseases that are very prevalent in the developed world. So that's on Talking Biotech.
Is he working on the vaccine that prevents reoccurrence, or is this like the next level where you're actually talking about just preventing cancer entirely?
Well, the first trials have been in people who've already had the disease to see if it comes back, because this way you're already treating somebody who you know is prone to developing those specific cancers. If you just did it in a wider population, you may never have people who develop those neoplasias, so you don't catch. It's statistically very difficult to tell if it's working. But once you've had some of these digestive cancers, it's likely that they will return. And so he's been able to show that people who take the vaccine stay in remission, which is really huge. So that's on the podcast this week.
Yeah, well, I have a million questions, but let's not re-record that episode. Everyone just go listen to that when you're done listening to this one. And then get in touch with us on Twitter at CamJEnglish, at Kevin Fulta, and more podcast episodes and more from GLP at geneticliteracyproject.org. And we will see you next time.